Hey, everybody. My last introduction was pretty lame, so I just spicing things up, Jim.
Yeah.
Listen, we have an interview for you to listen to on today's episode. It's with Christopher Martini. Who is Christopher Martini? He is he's a filmmaker, producer, editor. He's been both on camera and behind the scenes of cameras. And he's got a documentary that's coming out on June 14th, and it's called The Relentless Patriot. And it features Scott Lobato. If you don't know him, you're going to see some videos of Scott. And honestly, if you don't know him, you really haven't been following, anything going on in that area. Cause he's an activist, a patriot, an artist. He's been arrested a bazillion times. He's all over social media. The film is about him. And
you may not know him by name, but when you see
when you saw
who he is, what's happening, what's going on, you know who it is.
You'll know who that is. And Christopher Martini, the director of it, he is here joining us to tell us all about that and about how he got into conservatism. He's a born again conservative. He's not,
so you know he's accepted. You know he's accepted by Hollywood.
Yeah, but yeah. So you know that he's tops on their list. Stay tuned for that. Of course. Before that, we're going to talk about the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, and all the conspiracy theories that are going on around that. Jim and I are here to debunk all of those. Plus, some new troubles facing Americans with the border. Jim's going to tell us about that. A couple of other little things. On another amazing episode of what, Jimmy?
Two guys.
What do you?
Is that better?
Welcome to the Two Guys, One Coup podcast with Dale and Jim, where the truth matters and progressives' feelings don't. We bring you the facts from the perspective of two average, everyday guys who will never apologize for being America first, for adhering to our great Constitution, and for saluting the flag that our brothers and sisters have fought and died for. And now, here's Dale and Jim.
Yeah, that's absolutely exactly how I wanted it, Jim. I wanted it that way. I want it that way every time. I mean,
I was trying to do the Wolfman Jack thing, but I would have started coughing. So
I don't think you have a Wolfman Jack. Yeah, I can't do one either. So I can do zero impressions, Jim. Honestly, people who can do Wolfman Jack
pretty easily as long as you can do that. Man, you know that which
well, can you do it?
Throw problems.
So it's not that easy. You know, you think I'd be able to with all the cigarettes I intake, but it's coming pretty soon.
Bob Dylan.
I'll probably have more of a, oh geez, Jim, name escapes me. Crippled, just died. Brilliant. Liberal, been on Epstein Island. What's it, Steve? What's his name?
What?
The cripple. That's the voice I'll have, the robotic voice here soon with my cigarettes.
He died?
Yeah, you know. So who is it? You're talking.
He's on Big Bang Theory all the time. The smartest guy.
Yes. How come I can't remember? That's why we're not him.
Oh, my God. This is terrible.
This is terrible.
You know, and when people are listening to this, they're going to be yelling, this.
This is it. This is his name.
Who it is.
Anyways,
oh my God, he died?
Yes, he died. He should have died 50 years ago, but I mean, you know, look at him. He died a couple years ago now already, or a year or something like that already. It's been a while. Who is it, Jim? God, shit. Here we are wasting time. Sorry. Stephen
he's on
Hawking.
Big Bang Theory
Stephen
all the time.
Hawking.
They talk.
Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking. Yeah, thank you. They reference him all the time.
They do. That's who I'll sound like.
I didn't know he died. I'm not paying attention.
Episode. That'll be my voice here soon. Jim. Bridge collapse in Baltimore. Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Yeah.
Horrific tragedy. Right now, the update on it is the six people are still missing. Yeah. The Coast Guard has called off the search. I believe they were construction workers. I don't know, Jim, about cars that were on the bridge. I mean, most of them look like they kind of, you know, escaped that. Of course, the time it happened, thank God.
The time it happened.
Thank God, it was 1:30, 1:50 in the morning. What was it? It was right there at that time frame. I apologize, but it's a cargo ship, Singapore cargo ship, on its way out of port, lost power, ran into it. We all know it. We've all seen it. It's been everywhere for now. But for those who haven't, who just, you know, have heard about it, I'm going to show you the full length of it actually happening. And then, you know, the police dispatch call and then some aftermath shots on a video. Here's the full length video of it happening. Jim, let's get this going. Let's see. It should pop up here any minute. Yeah, it should, shouldn't it? But it's not, is it? Yeah. Well, it certainly didn't, did it? Jim, why are things so difficult for me on this show? There it is. I'm going to
read. Because you have no assistance.
Ah, here's why. You got to go on live, Jim. You got to go on live. So here it is. I don't know if there's any sound to it at all, but you can kind of see over here.
You don't need to. Yeah, you don't need to hear. See, there's a semi going over there.
Yeah, there's multiple. For that time of day, it's pretty decent traffic. Certainly not what it could have been. Thank God. But you'll see to the left there of it, the power will go out. There's a power outage. It will come back on. It goes back out. And that's when they lost all power, all steering is what, from what I heard, Jim. And it may have out in front of that bridge, there are pylons, kind of big giant cement pylons that will, it directs the boats where to go, you know, they believe it might have bounced off of one of those and then hit the bridge. It lost all control of the of the steering and everything else. Well, of course, you lose power on a ship like that. That's going to happen. But you see the power is out now. It's about a 3-minute video, but this is leading right up to it. And then you'll see the bridge just tumble down like unbelievably.
Yeah, that's the one thing that everybody was talking about is how easy that bridge just collapsed. But, you know, there's a lot of weight on that thing. I mean, that thing was hit filled. It like it would have hit. Yeah.
Yeah. So. With shipping containers filled with shipping containers. It was on a 25 day journey back to like Thailand in that area. I don't think it was Singapore, but Thailand, which is just absolutely crazy. But you see these cars going over, which, and there was construction on the bridge happening. Nothing structurally that would have caused this. Mm-hmm. So, filling potholes basically was what the construction was that was going on. should be coming up. There was a big like plume of smoke before it happened. And I think that's probably, whether that came from the engine room or there's still speculation on some of that. And by the time you guys are hearing this, we might know even more details on it. But yeah, its power should go out again, which I think you'll see here shortly because you can kind of see the light still on, which means they regained
power. It looks like it's trying to get, you know, trying to
move. It's trying, and there it goes. And then there it goes, just like that. You say unbelievable, and it's the truth. I mean, that is unbelievable how it just simply came down. I think what you expect is a bigger crash or a bigger, sort of shaking of something, you know, for something like that structure to come down. Of course, if you were there, you certainly would have felt it. You certainly would have noticed that was happening. And again, 6 people are still missing. I think that's the death count. They're saying, can you imagine what that would have been? Rush hour traffic in the morning. That would have been 6 hours later. What would have happened?
185 feet. You would have fallen into the water.
Yep. 185 feet.
And that's dodging the metal that's coming down all around.
That's right. There's metal
and, you know, steel and,
there's no getting around that. So, I'm going to play also here. the police dispatch call. It's just a video, and it has the police going back and forth about the situation shortly before it happened. And then, of course, you'll hear that it did happen. So let's get that. Hopefully you can hear this, Jim.
I need one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side, hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering. So that until you get that under control, we got to stop all traffic.
Yep, we're all on the route to the south side.
This is special direction.
I'm holding traffic now. I was driving, but we stopped prior to the bridge, so I'll have all out of the traffic stopped.
10-4, is there a crew working on the bridge right now?
K-9-1, but yeah.
Good.
Want me to stop traffic on their site right now?
Yeah, if we can stop traffic, just make sure no one's on the bridge right now. I'm not sure where. If there's a crew up there, you might want to notify whoever the foreman is, see if we can get them off the bridge temporarily.
10-4, once the other unit gets here, I'll ride up on the bridge. I have all interloop traffic stopped at this time. Once you get here, I'll go grab the workers on the Key Bridge and then stop the outer loop.
213 dispatch, the whole bridge just fell down. Start is whoever, everybody. The whole bridge just collapsed.
Simple dispatch is direct.
That's correct.
This time.
Do we know if all traffic was stopped?
I can't get to the other side, sir. The bridge is down. We're going to have to get somebody on the other side of the Anne Arundel County MSP to get up here and stop traffic coming northbound on the Key Bridge.
C-13, I'm holding all traffic northbound.
Yeah, that's kind of eerie, you know?
So they knew
to hear.
So the ship notified somebody that they had lost power, and that's what they're trying to do?
Apparently there was a mayday sent out. Obviously too late at that point. How do you stop a barge from just going like that size?
Stopping the traffic. Cause that it seemed were just trying to stop the traffic from going because they just wanted to, you know, so.
And notify they knew there was a crew working out there, you know? Literally if that was 5 minutes earlier, they might have saved all their lives and been able to just have the bridge collapse, which would have been, because to my knowledge, nobody on the ship was injured.
As a matter of fact, this was early reading. What I was reading about it is the ships are trained when something happens, they react. So apparently they were trying to look for survivors in the water. So they kicked into what they needed to do. So,
And so I literally, there's one more video. It's just shows the aftermath and more in daylight, so you can kind of get an idea of it, and then we'll finish talking about it here. Crazy. I mean, that is literally was just unbelievable. I say unbelievable. People are like, how can this happen? How can it? Well, first of all, you built a structure where boats go. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it can happen. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like
it's the first time it's happened.
It's not. Yeah. And it's not like the first time a bridge has collapsed. Infrastructure, we know what it's like around here and in the country. I mean, it does lack. It does need improvements, you know. And so far, there was supposed to be an infrastructure bill that was going to take care of things like that. That wouldn't have stopped this at all. This is for the conspiracy theorists out there, and Jim and I are conspiracy theorists a lot at times, you know.
And a lot of things.
This was an accident. This was
tragic,
an accident.
Tragic accident. It's not. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know that a lot of people on social media was, again, and this is why I'm not a fan of social media, they would comment that, oh, gee, what's the name of the bridge?
Oh, boy.
Right? Yep. The author of our Star-Spangled Banner. So, you know, I mean, I know people try to tie things like today's day and age, which is what's sad. This is the world we live in today. Well, so, is when tragedies like this happen, we automatically, was there terrorism?
Yep. Yep.
And sometimes it's not. You know.
Sometimes it's not. Sometimes they're just accidents. Yep. And from all indications, this is just an accident. There is no fact or. And I know everybody's like, well, how can you believe what they're telling you or what the press is telling you or what? There was a Mayday sent out from the boat that they had lost power. That first of all should just nip that in the bud right away. You're not going to send a Mayday out if you're going to purposely run into the bridge and do that. And they're not going to purposely run into the bridge at 1:50 in the morning.
Exactly. They would do it at rush hour. They would do it
at rush hour.
Be full.
Yep. Exactly.
And why that bridge?
So. And yeah, exactly. And so it's like, folks, let's just be fair and let's honor those that lost their lives. This was not a terrorist attack. Let's be truthful about it. You know, again, for some crazy, bizarre reason, I mean, I'll be the first to come on here and admit it if they find otherwise, you know, but now I'm sure they were probably trying to figure out a way that this was Trump's fault. You know,
well, I'm sure.
I'm sure, but you know, well, if he'd have passed that infrastructure bill, that would have been, those potholes would have been taken care of. And it would, I'm telling you, it wouldn't put it past me that
into some of our smaller, shorter stories here that would it really be far-fetched for this to happen? So,
yep, exactly. Well, Jim, you're up and on because that's really what I had for the beginning. Well, I wanted to address it. I know it's kind of, I want to say old news. I mean, but it just happened.
Well, real quick, let's
make sure we address it.
Let's get into MSNBC and NBC. They had a chance.
They did.
They had a chance to get another voice on their show. Okay, another voice on their network.
They're not biased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To prove to everyone that they are. Well, Rona McDaniel, who stepped down, let go, whatever you want to say about her, the head of Republican Party. Mm-hmm. They hired her for $300,000
as an analyst,
meet the press. Yeah, meet the press to come on and talk. Oh my God, Joy Reid, Rachel Maddow, Morning Joe, all of these individuals just went nuts on the heads. How could you hire such a person? This is Rona McDaniel, right? She's not a Trump supporter.
No,
she's not. If anything,
she
does not like Trump.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
But here's another voice for you to have on there to show, okay, we're not one-sided. They're one-sided
because and they keep proving it.
Say what you want about Fox News. All right. They have a lot of leftists.
They do.
On that network.
They do.
They have a lot of, and no one's calling them for him to be fired.
Yeah. I mean, they do. Unlike OAN and all that, who doesn't? So yes, you're right. Of course, they're all going to lean that way.
Yeah.
NBC had but the mainstream media. So we're not talking about cable news networks. We're talking about the mainstream media: the ABC, the CBS, the NBCs had an opportunity here. One of them to say, "Hey, listen, you know, this is what we're going to show. We're moving in this direction." How could they be more blatantly? We already knew it. It's not like this was a secret that they were biased, but how much more blatantly biased can they get than to have those buffoons, Joe Scarborough, Rachel Maddow, Joy Reid, one of the biggest racists on TV today, dictating to the network themselves, "You better get her off. We don't like her. She's Republican."
That is exactly what they
did. I mean, God almighty. And right there, if I was Joy Reid or Scarborough or Maddow, I'd be like, I'm untouchable. You guys are going to do what the hell I say. You know, I mean, that's the most ridiculous.
You know,
who's in charge of that freaking network?
And the fact that he caved, the network guy caved.
Yes.
Because their viewership's down. I mean, they're way down.
Rightfully too.
In President Trump, obviously, you know, he's going to make a comment.
Yeah.
And he, you know, basically said that Rona McDaniel, got fired by fake news NBC. She only lasted 2 days. And this after McDaniel went out of her way to say what they wanted to hear. You know, she went out of her way to say what they wanted her to say. It leaves her in a very strange place. It's called Never Neverland. And it's not a place you want to be. And then he goes on to say, these radical left lunatics are crazy, and the top people NBC are weak. They are broken and embarrassed by low ratings, highly overpaid talent. Bring back free and fair press. Make America great again, 2024.
Yep.
And this was the perfect opportunity for that.
Yep.
And so what? You've got somebody on there that might give you a little spin. But let's face it, she is not a fan of President Trump because President Trump kind of pretty much pushed her out.
Because you and I have been saying
since day one, she needed to go because we lost the midterms when we should never have lost it. Mm-hmm. She never really pushed the 2020 issue with the election and
she was terrible
going on out there. And it was so she
I don't feel bad for her. That's not the problem. No. I feel no sorriness for her. I feel sorry for America. That
she was when she was a Republican national chair, she was directed by somebody.
She was.
And it would have been the Bushes and that group of people right there. That's who she was directed by. And we all know damn well they're not fans of President Trump. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just thought
and we know hey, why.
Here we go. Thanks, Greg. I mean, a chance to maybe bring some people back, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe. Yep. And it was only on one show.
Yep.
Meet the Press.
Meet the Press. One show. Jim, can I add one more thing before I forget?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I just want to thank Christy again for coming on the show. And we played, you guys heard yesterday, part two of her interview with us on the docuseries, What Happened to Austin. We didn't review that. We'll review that next week, Jim, when we have a little bit more time, but we'll review part two of it. But again, just thanks to her. And please go back and listen to those episodes and share them wherever you can. It's a little different for our podcast, and that's exactly what we want, is a little different. And so thanks to her again.
It's great, an interesting story because we've all talked about this before. Everybody heard it. Heard it. You just forgot about it because it happened.
You just forgot about it.
Mm-hmm. And now it's going to come back and bring things. And now it's going to put some things in perspective. So it's actually, she did a great job.
She's great.
Christy, if you're listening, you did a great job. Don't worry about how you sounded. You did great.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
And we'd love to have you back on.
And everyone who's heard it told us as much. So, you know, that's the important part. It's not just coming from us. It's coming from people that listen to it. Anyways, go on, Jim. I'll let you continue. I just wanted to make
sure. One of the biggest jokes, again, California keeps, they keep setting the stage for idiocy, right? I mean, come on. Well, if you guys remember a few years ago, Governor Newsom, they had a recall election.
Yeah,
I do
remember that. Yeah.
So he won the recall election.
A farce.
Which is very rare, by the way. A lot of people don't usually do that.
Yeah.
Because the state is in such great shape, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is now a fresh recall petition, which is makes no sense because he only has a few more months, right?
That's it.
Fresh recall petition targeting Gavin Newsom, a Democrat, has been greenlit for signature collection, marking a renewed effort to oust him from office. The petition approved on Tuesday by the state's Secretary of State, Shirley Weber, sets the stage for potential upheaval in the Golden State's political landscape. Folks, don't spend the money. Don't waste your time.
What are they doing?
Because the lieutenant governor will be governor for 7-8 months.
Exactly. I mean, it's a waste of time.
Now, get this, though. Organized by Rescue California, the petition cites a range of grievances against Newsom, includes concerns over public finances, which we know what's happened to that, especially if you read Blood Money. Yeah. Policies on immigration, yes. Public safety, yes. Taxation. Yes. COVID-19 management and homelessness. According to the Weber's public memorandum, the petition must garner 1.3 million valid signatures, which is equivalent to 12% of the votes won at the last gubernatorial election. Folks, you had 2 years to bring this up again. You had an opportunity to oust him from because of what's been going on.
But
California, I know some people didn't vote for him, but you choose to live there. Yep. Okay. And this is what you get.
Yep. Exactly.
This is what you get. I mean, California's fiscal trajectory, just listen to this, has set or has seen a stark reversal, transitioning from a $97.5 billion surplus in 2022 to a $31.5 billion deficit in 2023. 1 year. And he triumphed in 2021 recall election, like we talked about. And it's like, guys, Joe Biden couldn't do this. In 1 year, it went from a 97, which I sometimes when you see what they have a surplus, it's not completely a surplus. It's all out there. But now it's a billion-dollar deficit, $31 billion deficit. So I the reason I bring this up is because this is the guy that I really honestly believe was going to be the main person that the Democrats wanted to replace Joe Biden going into the 2024 election. Correct. Now I'm starting to, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this guy's not the guy. And I have a feeling the Dems are stuck. Michelle Obama's already said she's not doing it. Okay. Gavin Newsom was the odds on favorite to get it. So folks, they are stuck right now.
They are stuck
with the two individuals they have right now. You and I don't need to spend a whole lot of time on this. I just just jumped out at me, but so we kind of want to. Washington Governor Jay Inslee this week signed into law the Strippers Bill of Rights. The grant statewide workers protection to adult dancers in the Evergreen State. CBS News reports. This is going to sound weird. They weren't protected.
What rights?
The Bill of Rights, why we're passing this bill. They are working folks, is what they said. And they are. And working people deserve safety in the environment in which they work. There should have been safety to begin with.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, have you ever, Jim, I don't know if you've ever been, because you're super innocent.
I've never been to a strip club.
You've never been to one. So, I've heard that there are bouncers and stuff in those places.
Among the measures included in the bill are the establishments must train employees to prevent sexual assault and harassment. How do you train
naked dancing? I'm twisting.
I mean, how do you
say
how
we
do you
can't spend much time on this, but I don't know how we don't.
They're you and naked. I could get in trouble talking about this.
But there's sexual harassment?
Yeah. Sexual assault.
Okay. Assault.
Sexual assault.
Okay. I thought you said harassment in there.
Well, no. And harassment. Sorry. Yeah. Sexual assault and harassment. Yeah.
How can you harass a naked woman dancing, wanting your money?
Yeah.
How do you?
And also they're putting panic buttons in private rooms where customers can be on. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if I've ever been to one that has private rooms, but
well, Jim,
you're trying to sit there and tell me that you are sending a woman into a room with a drunken man to do dancing, right? Because the other stuff's, unless you're in Vegas or somewhere else, it's illegal. And you're not having some safety in there? Like there's not a video in there or something that if there's something starts happening to this woman that somebody can't just break in and so this
is weird. I don't know, but
I would have thought this stuff would have all been there, because these are legal establishments. They're not illegal at any stretch of imagination. They're allowed to be there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just weird.
I'm a little miffed by the whole safety thing. Of course, not sexual assault. I mean, I understand all that. Yeah, that's
sexual harassment. I agree with you. I mean, you got drunken. People. You're allowing drunken people that, you know.
If a stripper is in front of you, like, wow, nice ass. Is that harassment?
Well, technically, yeah, but I don't think that's the issue. It's touching them. Like, you can't touch them. And which you should never touch
that's
them.
Assault.
And guys,
that's
not I harassment. Know there are some people. I love the guys that says, man, I could have went home with her. She really liked me. How much money did you
now,
course you like. Now, I know people that have gone home with strippers. I know two people. Yes.
They're independent filmmakers.
Yeah. I know. It does
happen. And it worked out well for them.
It does happen. But most of the, now, can we even talk about that to him? You have you can say something that the rest of us wish we could.
Most people can't.
But anyway.
Yours was money well spent, brother.
The reason I thought this struck me as funny is because I didn't realize that strippers had no rights in the state of Washington.
Where's the reparations for strippers? That's what I
want. Well, it's coming next. But anyway, okay. So here's what I want to quickly talk about. Something new that has come up. Now, what the issue is nothing new. We all know that the skimmers that they put on the credit card, you know, on the
gas
stations. Mm-hmm. And we know that's there. That's has always been there. Mm-hmm. But here's something that is now – it's actually a thing here, folks. Russia, the Romanian mob, they're crossing the border illegally to steal what they can and cut the ankles off monitors if they get caught. Okay. So in other words, in California, prosecutors in California say that the Romanian mafia has given a new look to an old scam, the debit card skimming, by placing devices to steal personal information on the self-checkout machines in grocery stores. Mm-hmm. Debit card skimmers have long been problematic at gas stations and ATMs. We've all heard about it. We've all seen it. Mm-hmm. Now they're highly organized. Okay. But the key thing is they have unlimited people coming across the border. So if one person gets caught, we got another one coming through. Okay. Mm-hmm. So again, another issue with the border.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And these skimmings is nothing, folks. The wealthy are not getting punished by this. All right, this is us.
This is our everyday. Because when we got to fill up once a week, twice a week, people.
Yep. Your debit card comes out of your checking and savings account.
Correct.
All right, it's not like a credit card. Mm-hmm. All right, when you use your debit card, and that's why when I shop online and stuff like that, I do not use my debit card. I use my credit card. I use
a virtual card.
But man, Walmart and Target are the biggest issues. And what they do is, and this is what's weird, they act like they're panhandling. Sometimes they'll sit out there and they have a couple kids with them and they're like begging, going up to it. But what they're really doing is they have Bluetooth technologies that's connected to a skimmer. And so when somebody's skimming, now it's at they only put it at the express checkout lanes.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because that's harder for people to see and because it's real quick to put that over. They just put it over the top. So one of the things they say, and folks, I'm going to start doing this from now on because I'll be honest with you. I never think anything of this, but feel the scanner. Feel it. Mm-hmm. And if it's loose.
Where you insert your card, you mean?
Yeah. Where you pay your bill. Okay. Mm-hmm. They put a cover over it that looks exactly like the cover that's already there. They just lay it right on top of it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you're punching the numbers, they're collecting that information from that card. And then you put your PIN number in, they got it. Right. Bam. So if you feel it and it moves and then you can take the top plate off, it's a skimmer.
Yep.
So, so I can't stress this enough. And I know it's in California, but it's working its way.
Oh, it hasn't already done so. They've been doing, like you said, this is not a new scam. People's cons have been doing this for a while, but now it's coming from a Romanian mob and they're infiltrating and doing it all over. You know, it's going to come here and you get money taken out from your, good luck with the bank getting that back. You know,
it's hard.
That's why I either tap to pay or I do whatever, again, another risk of just self-checkout.
And really, guys, they are stealing $9 million a month.
Holy shit.
There is a picture. They show a picture of a suspect. They blurt out his face, which I don't know why. I guess as soon as he's guilty, show it, please. But he's posing with designer clothes.
Yeah.
And an Audi sports car. You and I know those aren't cheap. Yeah.
Those are not cheap.
They're not. Be careful because more than $100 million worth of theft robbed taxpayer funded welfare programs and their recipients because they're going after EBT cards as well.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. So
EBT ones probably, that makes sense.
But I got to tell you, I know people going to sit there and say, oh, my God, this has been a problem. This is now an organized problem by a Romanian mob that are sending people into this country across the border.
The board. Yep. Without being checked. No, no.
So checks. And here's another thing now that we as American citizens who do the right things, mm-hmm. you know, whether you're liberal or Democrat, we do the right things, right? We go to work. We do what we got to do. Yep. We believe different things. And that's fine. That's what America's all about. That's why we're so great.
Yeah, but and this affects all of us. It's not political.
This administration has made us so unsafe. Now they've added this to it.
Yep.
Guys, the people are losing money.
Yeah.
They're losing money and they can't get this back. Yeah, they can't get this back. If you and I have thousands of dollars taken out of our accounts, it's not easy for us to put that back in there.
You're correct.
It's correct. Not. Now, billionaires, billionaires, but they don't rarely do they go shopping at Walmart. Very rarely do they go shopping at Target. So they're not going after them. They're going after us because we go our daily lives. We go to that. Think about it. You get your gas, you just slide your card in. You don't think anything of it. You don't.
Yep.
You know, but now every time I go, I push on stuff. I make sure everything.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to, which then increases the risk of COVID, Jim, by touching.
Well, I don't care. I'll rather do COVID than lose money. But the problem that I have that I wanted to talk about this more than anything is here we are again. Another situation where this administration has made us unsafe in many, many, many ways. Thank God terrorist attack has not happened yet. But we all know that it's coming, right? We know that something's going to happen one way or the other. And in some cases, what happened to Lake and Riley, that was a terrorist attack.
It was a terrorist.
You can actually say that was a terrorist attack. Here was an illegal person in this country that took out a violent act against one person. And and so, guys, and they keep and he can and don't take this anyway. He can stop it right now. Mm-hmm. But you go back in Mayorkas, they showed video of him bragging when they got rid of all the Trump presidential executive orders that he put to secure the border.
Correct.
They took all that and they bragged about it. So now Joe Biden comes in and says, well, they need to pass the bill. The Republicans need to pass this bill for me to secure. No, if you were able to executive order take Trump's executive orders out, just put them back in.
Just reinstate them. And that's all. Unbelievable.
So there's something going on.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yep. There's something going on here, folks. But here we are again. Now we got to watch for these skimmers more than we've ever had before. So there you go.
That's right. That's right. $9 million a month. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, a month.
Jim, let's get to our interview. What do you think? Our interview, Christopher Martini. So it's a couple show interview notes here on this. Right before Christopher comes on, you're going to see the trailer for his film, The Relentless Patriot, which will be released on June 14th. We'll tell you why those days are important during the interview. You'll hear that. Somewhere about the middle, I'm going to play a Scott Lobato video. You'll know who that is. At the end, I've got a couple videos that I'm going to play of Scott. And then Jim and I will be back to wrap it up.
Because of woke criminal loving district attorneys.
Right, come on, murderer. This is a street performance.
Seems like all the artist activists are on the left. Except for Scott Lobato.
I do not conform to the elitist isms of the art clubs, and they have left me like a redheaded stepchild.
This is my medium in which I shall create, and this is my canvas, the front of the Brooklyn Museum.
The first most important thing in school or anywhere else is the Pledge of Allegiance.
This is not a pro-war protest. This has to do with the increasing level of anti-Americanism.
They don't keep the criminals in jail. They're not going to keep you in jail.
This line is to show respect and honor to those who died, got shot in the fucking head, protecting us. You try to take that fucking blue line down. I'll paint it till the day I die.
When the towers came down, there was absolutely no doubt that feeling, it was going to change my life. And it did.
When somebody's complaining, it's so cold out, you know, the traffic. And here I am, drinking
with one of these guys who's got one arm, he's got a hook for another arm, and he's drinking a fucking beer having a laugh with me, and he's not bitching about nothing.
I present to you the recipient of this year's VFW Americanism Award, Mrs. Scott Lovato.
That's it. I want to paint a flag on a rooftop in every state near a military base.
As a veteran, we all fought for our flag in World War II. And today, we want to see it flying.
They will never, as long as I am alive, they will never take the American flag down. You want to burn one? Then I will find out where you work, and I will find a building across the street and paint a flag 50 by 100, so you have to see it every f***ing day.
A pro-Trump sign on the front lawn of a Staten Island home was burned to the ground.
The hate I get is astronomical. If everybody liked me, I'd be doing something wrong. My mother's advice, whatever you do with your life, as long as you believe it in your heart and always take care of those less fortunate. My father's advice was, son, take from nobody.
This is about control and division.
We must unite. We must take a stand. Are you ready?
Live, 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 ride, live.
God didn't give me a gun and a bayonet. He gave me paint and brush, and I will fight to the f***ing death for this country.
Get on up, get on up.
We are really happy to have with us today Christopher Martini. Who is Christopher? Well, he's here to discuss not only just his background, which started very, very young in Hollywood. He was a child star in an HBO movie. We're going to get into a little bit about that, Christopher, because I don't know it and I want to know more about it. But he is also the creator, director, producer of a new, what I would say, a documentary film coming out called The Relentless Patriot. And The Relentless Patriot is about Scott Lovato. Now, if you don't know who Scott Lovato is, he's an American patriotic artist. The guy's been around for 30 years doing this. He's all over social media. He's very well known. If you don't know who he is, I don't know what rock you've been under, but really you need to look him up. We got introduced and by a mutual friend, Sandra, and I want to thank her for that introduction. And we want to talk to you, Christopher. Thank you for coming on the show, about your background, about film, you know, Hollywood, how you got associated with Scott. How did that all mesh up? And what was it like working with Scott? Because that's pretty important, too, because he's a character. He's one of a kind. I love that dude. Trust me. You know, he's out there doing the hard work and fighting for American patriotism. And for all those that are sitting back, you know, complaining and not doing anything, Scott's doing the dirty work out there. So, and you capture that. Our audience just saw the trailer to The Relentless Patriot and can't wait for it to come out. Christopher, thank you for coming on the show again. It's an honor for us to have you here. Where do we begin? Let's begin. I'll tell you where we'll begin. What's this HBO thing, child actor stuff? How did you get involved in all that?
Well, you guys, thank you for having me on the show. Mm-hmm. So I was born in Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
To a parole officer. My mom was a parole officer, and my dad was a sculptor. My dad, who passed away, was a sculptor from Italy, from Rome, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, half Italian, half Irish. You know, my Texas family settled in Texas in the 1800s, settled in El Paso.
So wow.
We're a real Texas family. Mm-hmm. My mom married a very Italian guy. So
yeah,
it was
sort
of a clash of two cultures, you know, and then that didn't last too long. And, so they divorced my father, who was a great influence on me just as an artist, I can talk a little later about what he gave me.
Yes,
just as an artist. But my mom married my stepfather, who when I was 2 years old, and his name is Stuart Margolin. Mm-hmm. He was an actor. He won 2 Emmy Awards for The Rockford Files.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He played Angel on The Rockford Files. So my family moved around. We moved out of Texas. We moved to LA. We went up to Canada. He was just, you know, traveling around, mm-hmm. working on movies, working on TV shows. So, my brother, my sister and I all caught the film bug. And, I gravitated towards directing, mm-hmm. making my own films. I was like running around with a video camera, a crappy little video camera. Mm-hmm. And I would edit my film with, 2 VCRs. And I just loved it. I was like 12, 13 years old. And I just sit there, hitting like play, mm-hmm. record, play, record. And it was so like, it was so hard to do that.
Yeah.
But there was something about it. I loved it because when you saw like the juxtaposition of shots and just creating stories with that, I fell in love with that. Mm-hmm. And my brother gravitated towards acting, and he, I would put him in these little silly movies. And my sister just, although I put her in one of my movies, she ended up being a brilliant costume designer. So all three of us are working in Hollywood today. And mm-hmm. I'm a little bit outside Hollywood. My brother and sister are more entrenched in that world. But, mm-hmm. My brother has acted in movies like Captain Phillips, Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, wow. But
we've been doing stuff since the very beginning of the time. Like I went to NYU film school, and he was acting in all my student films, and we were living together. My sister always did my costumes, and now mm-hmm. she's a huge costume designer in LA. Like she won awards. She every Super Bowl, she designed at least 2 of those commercials. So
you're kidding me.
This year she did the one with Christopher Walken, where he's getting in the car.
Oh, no kidding.
I don't love the Super Bowl anymore. I just watch my sister's commercials, but 1 year it was crazy. She designed like 4 or 5 commercials. I don't even know how that's humanly possible. In one Super Bowl, like 5 commercials, my sister did the costumes. Anyway, she's absolutely brilliant. So the Glitter Dome was this film that my stepfather directed. Mm-hmm. It was based on a novel by Joseph Wamba, which is about, a Los Angeles cop. Mm-hmm. So James Garner played this cop, and then his partner was John Lithgow.
Yep.
And so I was 10 years old, and my stepfather put me in a scene with John Lithgow.
Yeah.
And it was pretty crazy because he asked me to audition. He's like, just drop on the ground and start crying like you have blood all over you. I mean, this is like what it's like growing up in a Hollywood family. You do all these crazy things. And so I hit the ground. I started screaming. It's like, you got the part, it was crazy. So I did this little scene with John Lithgow, and I can send you guys the clip, but
yeah, I would love to see.
I was his, so he was a suicidal cop, and I was his flashback. I was the kid that he never saved.
Oh, okay.
And my character name was Danny Meadows. One time I saw John Lithgow at a play in New York, and I said, "Hey, it's Danny Meadows."
Yeah.
And I was much older, and I think I scared the hell out of him. But anyways, he runs into the room, and he picks me up, and he carries me out of the room in his arms, and I'm like, I'm bleeding. And but all I remember was like the cinematographer This is when I knew I didn't want to be an actor. I wanted to work behind the camera because the cinematographer, you know, this is when they shot on film and he had the light meter and he put this thing in my face and it was this little, to me, it was like this magical crystal ball. I was like, what is this thing in my face? And I wanted to know about the lights and the fog machine and, and, you know, and just like, just how a film functions. And, you know, my stepfather had these classic movies like lying around the house. Like, you know, he had films by Orson Welles, like he had Citizen Kane. Mm-hmm. He had this movie Sunset Boulevard. They also had the Muppet movie, thank God, you know, but you know, there was like Bergman, you know, and Kurosawa. And so like, you know, I was watching these movies at 10 years old, wanting to make these like deep psychological movies at like an early age. And, you know, I didn't even know what they were saying. I just knew that they were cool.
Yeah.
You know, and that I wanted to get
them. Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, that's, you know, to go from being in front of the camera and then having at that age, young age, the willingness or the want to know how the behind the scenes things. I mean, that's kind of one of those born to do things, you know, right? You know that that's the direction you want to go. And then of course to have the brother and sister and everybody that's involved in it. That's a really great story, honestly, you know, that you're all involved with that. Hence the Triple Martini, I'm assuming, Productions.
They were also, this is really funny, they were also in that movie.
Were they?
But this is a little twisted. Like they were in this like kiddie porn scene that my stepfather put in. And it was like, I mean, like we're lucky like that didn't like totally mess us up, you know? Yeah. And like, he puts me in this scene where I'm like, you know, got like abused or something. Yeah. And then, you know, my brother and sister in this kiddie porn scene, we're really lucky we survived this film.
Now, how did he present that to your mom?
They're all like, it's just like the film people, we're all narcissists. It doesn't matter. You know, but what I was going to say is like when I went to NYU and, you know, just my storytelling developed, I had a film professor at NYU that I loved. I loved this guy. He just, his name was Charles Milne, and he's dead, but I dream of this guy. He's like my film hero. Mm-hmm. And he was so cliche. He would wear like a beret and he had a scarf. he'd smoke these cigarettes. And then like, he'd be talking about like, you know, William Friedkin and the smoke would just keep coming out of his mouth forever. but he like, even though I sucked, he just, at the time he had a way of like, letting you know that there's like some kind of greatness inside of you. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, cause film is such a hard medium. It's so expensive. Mm-hmm. It takes like, you know, endless amounts of time and money and you know, you spend that long on a film and if it doesn't go, you know, you're crazy to want to do it again.
Agreed. But, right.
But if you're hooked on it, you keep going. Mm-hmm. So, But that's what he did. He planted something inside of me. And, you know, there aren't too many students from that NYU film class that are still making films. I think it's out of like 30 people, I might be the only one in that class.
Wow. It's crazy.
Wow.
Wow.
I might be the only one in that class that is actually still,
because NYU is known for, right? That's a popular school to go to for acting film. And film and stuff, right? Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to learn how to tell a story. Like when and then translate that to film, because it's not like a play. You, characters can't say what they're really thinking, and you know, it just, you, everything has to be told visually. So, you know, before I went to high school, I got a job editing for an ABC movie of the week, and there was, and we were cutting on film, and the editor, you know, I showed him some of my student films, and he said something that I'll never forget, and it, like, it hurt. It hurt because, like, I put all these effort into making my student films, but he was like, he looked at him and he was like, Chris, like, filmmakers tell stories, you know, and that's all he said, and he, like, said that and then walked away, and I was like, you know,
I'm like, oh, crap,
and I had to really think about what he said, and but what he was saying is that, you know, I had made these experimental stories, but they didn't have a beginning, middle, and end. They didn't have a protagonist that wants something, and, you know, just the world coming against him or her to get that thing. It was just, you know, I hadn't understood the principles of story. I'm actually doing an online film course that maybe when I launch, I'll let you guys know.
I'm going to
come back on here.
Please.
But I'm going to be teaching veterans and first responders as well how to translate their story to film, you know?
So, yeah. Wow. Cool. That's great. Awesome. That's great. So is in the, excuse me, the Relentless Patriot. Let's, I want to go there because that's your newest piece of work, I believe. Right. Or at least the one that's going to be released. It's supposed to be released June 14th, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Which is Flag Day. And also another day, happens to be, I think, President Trump's birthday on that day. So,
and the U.S. Army's birthday
So wow. It's very, that's, was that planned that way?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just making sure. I was just making sure that it was planned that way. Was Scott someone you pursued to make a film? How did that all generate? And, what was it like putting all of that together? Cause that's a long history. There's a lot of, I mean, you know, Scott goes back 30 plus years of activism and his artistry and his patriotism. How did that all come to play?
It's really interesting how this project started. So, I had a really successful production company in Manhattan, in Midtown Manhattan. And I was, you know, as filmmakers, you have to find a way to, you know, fund what you're doing and keep going. Cause like, there's going to be months where you're struggling and then you're doing okay. So you, like, a side gig for me was always editing. So I would work on these shows, but then I became a union editor, and then I got sick of that. And I, like, editors started to bother me, like these people who just like to be in a dark room all day, you know, like, I was like, that's not me. You know, I love editing, but I only love editing after I go out and I shoot a movie. You know?
Yeah.
So I started this company, and we were making these corporate videos for these Fortune 500 companies, you know, just these really high budget corporate videos. We're doing really well. It funded a couple films of mine, and then COVID hit, and, you know, basically the clients stopped calling. My partner and I were like, we got to shut the company down. And, you know, we were running two camera shoots, and doing like 360 VR and all this other kind of stuff. But like all of our gear, we had two cameras, we had two of everything. And we were like, you know what, let's just split all this stuff down the middle. I'll take half, you take half. So, I took my half, and, this is really interesting, is I always hired cinematographers, but, you know, during the pandemic, I was so bored. I'm like, you know what, I'm going to just learn how to shoot. And, and, you know, I had shot before, but I was like, I'm going to really learn how to shoot and how to do it well. So I had so much time, and, you know, I taught myself everything, and I was like, you know, I'm just going to start shooting stuff. And, so Now, this is when like the George Floyd riots are happening and and our cities are burning.
Yes.
Oh, that didn't happen. That didn't happen.
And January 6th was the only bad thing. So
I come from a family of liberals and but you know, and I used to be a Democrat. You know, during when 9/11 hit, that's when things started to change for me. And that was my major event, you know, in my lifetime that changed me. You know, like other people have World War II, and this was me. And that's when, you know, I started working with veterans and I made this movie Trooper. Which that's a whole other story, Trooper. But I played an Iraq veteran with PTSD, and my dad's a Vietnam vet, and you know, it was a story of healing and just like two warriors healing. And but that opened all these floodgates in my mind, because the more veterans I hung out with, I started to look at what was going on in the world. Whereas before I didn't know what was going on in the Middle East, you know. So I started to learn, and I saw what our veterans were going through. And then what happened was, I put a magnifying glass on the country at that time. And cause I was like, how are our veterans really being perceived? And, you know, and I saw this apathy, and I saw this lack of concern for their well-being, and, you know, and frankly, ungratefulness, and, you know, as a nation. And, you know, and that's when the roots of my conservatism started to emerge. And, you know, I remember, I look back on my grandfather, who was a World War II veteran. And, you know, and I started to remember all the things that he said. And, you know, and so, okay. So when the pandemic hit, I was already, you know, a full on Republican.
Yeah.
And, you know, Trump came along, and, you know, the way I look at it is you're walking in the forest with this guy, Trump, and he like picks up this log, and under the log you see all the rotting and the termites. And that's my visual for like
what it's he a good did. Visual. Yep.
That's what he did, is he made me see all the worms and the termites, termites that are like burrowing in and destroying our country. And you know, not just in politics, but like also in the arts, you know, because like with the movie Trooper that I made, I got so, and I made this movie, The Stone Child, about a Lakota Native American kid, you know, totally different. They both did really well. Like Trooper, Springsteen and Dylan each gave us a song, which was unheard of.
That's right.
You know, but like with Trooper, I was on the phone with Tribeca and Sundance. So he not only uncovered the politics, but also I could see like in the arts, these gatekeepers, these like these Marxists, these people that, you know, didn't want me in their club.
Sure. To begin
with. So, you know, like when the pandemic hit, is when I just like everything just came to fruition. I said, you know what? I've had enough of this. And I had a few little experiences with people that were memorable, that, you know, that upset me, that bothered me, things, you know, that happened. But at that point I was like, you know, I'm a conservative. I'm going to let people know, like, you know, our veterans fought and died. My grandfather, he fought so that we would have our freedom of expression, that we shouldn't feel Like, we have to hide who we are. We shouldn't be afraid. Like, in Hollywood, there are so many people that are afraid. They will get blacklisted.
Sure.
They even sense that you're a Republican, you know.
James Woods comes to mind for sure. You know,
James Woods, Kevin Sorbo, you know,
yep.
like
yep.
these are brave people, and like conservatism in the arts is like the new punk rock. You mm-hmm. may have heard that, but it really is. Like
yeah.
we are like the true rebels because nobody wants us to make films, you Correct. Know? Like Hollywood doesn't want guys like me making movies, mm-hmm. you know, like the tech companies certainly don't, you know? So, mm-hmm. so like we are truly the ones pushing against the grain. So during the pandemic, I started shooting this series that I'm still going to do called Liberty Ship. And it's just an homage to my grandfather. My grandfather was on a Liberty ship. The mm-hmm. Liberty ships were bringing much needed supplies
yep.
during World War II. You know, and so the series was just to deliver like these values that we need, to restore, mm-hmm. you know, to give back these values that are lost, you know? So
yeah.
I was interviewing all these people. I'm getting to Scott Lobato, I promise.
Oh, no. Take your time. No, this is all very good background and good information. So, yeah.
But I was, you know, I just realized that like the path was just opening up because I would, you know, I was reading the Wall Street Journal at the time. Mm-hmm. I still skim it, although I don't really like it. But,
yeah.
I don't trust who owns it.
Yeah, but, that's the bottom.
Correct.
Line. You're right. Right.
But you know, so I would email these journalists and I said, I want to interview you. And they said yes. And I would go interview them. So I was doing these interviews and just talking about what was going on in the country. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because it's stuff that I was concerned with. So this, my landlord said, you have to interview Scott Lobato.
Okay.
And my landlord, who's a conservative, luckily.
Yeah, yeah, good.
Because I live in like liberal Park Slope, Brooklyn. he said, you got to interview Scott Lobato. So, and yeah. My landlord actually helped me with the shoot, like setting up lights.
And nice. Things.
I went to like Scott Lobato's studio and, you know, talk about a long interview.
Mm-hmm.
This was like 2 hours. And he had me laughing,
yeah.
crying, like pissed off, you know,
it's all the above with him.
All of the above. Yeah. And all the stuff that he protested for, all the stuff that I didn't even know a guy like this existed in the arts.
I mean, correct.
And the interesting thing is like my father is very similar to Scott. So mm-hmm. I made a documentary on my father, the Italian sculptor, that's on Amazon and other platforms. It's called The Tree of Art.
And that's what that is. Correct. Okay.
My father, just like Scott Lobato, pissed everybody off. And everybody. Like, yeah. And, you know, the film is about my father getting into the Venice Biennale and then trying to kick him out of the show. And he's like protesting and fighting his way back in. This was the film that Scott Lobato saw when he, you know, he wanted me to do his documentary. This is probably the reason, you know, but
yeah.
So I did this amazingly long interview for something else. And then, you know, Scott and I sat down and, you know, he said, I need a documentary. And, you know, it was a no-brainer. I said, mm-hmm. yes. It was the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I wasn't doing anything, you know, so he paid me some money up front and I just mm-hmm. started filming him. Cut to, you know, 5 years later,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's been a really long process. But yeah. the thing with Scott is like, he never stops. So, you know, he never stops protesting. He never stops yeah. doing art. He's always like on top of it. If something happens, he's there. Mm-hmm. So I just kept filming better and better stuff. And this went on for a long time. But he gave me this box of footage from 30 years. Like he's been doing this for 30 yep. years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was the most grueling editing that I've ever done. I was like, you know what? I'm too old for this. I'm never going to do this again. You know, this should be like some nerdy guy with a skateboard.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it was stuff that I cared about because Scott, you know, he protests for veterans, you know, so I can continue my body of work with veterans and like law enforcement. This was like the next thing for me because that's what happened during the riots. I was like, why are they attacking our police? That's just the stupidest thing that I've ever heard of.
Yep.
You know, you attack the people that make you safe. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous concept. You know, not all cops are bad, you know, and the majority are amazing human beings and they're also veterans, you know?
Well, when you have the other side telling everyone that they're the bad, they're the reason why this is happening.
Everybody.
Yeah, you've got people who don't know enough to know better. So, Chris, in the we played the beginning, the lead in to your show. I wanted to ask you on some of the videos where it shows him right when he was beat up and stuff. Did you shoot that, or was that some of the video he gave you to splice into your movie?
Yeah, the shot of Scott with a bloody face. Yeah. I wasn't there for that. But this is a really funny thing is that I, you know, because Scott's been arrested so many times.
So many.
And he, I don't like to give away too much of the film, which Scott always says. He goes on air and he gives away the whole thing.
I know.
More people pull it out of him. It's not his fault. Yeah. But I did say to Scott, I said, you know, you better get arrested, you know, like for my movie.
Yeah. I mean, like, it has to, right?
I better be filming when you get arrested. So, he wanted to do a protest in front of Alvin Bragg's office. And this is that little, that little bit in the trailer.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he was like, he's like, I don't think you need to be there for that one.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is where, like, as a filmmaker, you gotta trust your guts. You gotta know when to film and when not to film. And,
correct.
You know. So I was like, no, I'm coming.
Yeah, it sounds like something you'd want to be at. Yeah,
I'd want to be there.
And you know, of course it was great. He got arrested. And, you know, it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, yeah, you don't want to give too much of it away. I mean, you're right. If you follow Scott on social media at all, go to his TikTok or wherever you find him. He talks, he tells you, he tells you everything you want to know.
Trying to take out all his F words. I mean, he dropped like a million F-bombs and, you know, I tried to take out as many as I could, you know, it's like every other word.
That's him though. I mean, that's his.
You know what happened? There was, we did a little sneak preview screening and there was an older veteran in the audience.
Yeah.
And this guy was like a hardcore, you know, Christian, like just, no swearing, like, and a lot of our audience are going to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
He said afterwards, you know, I don't like swearing at all. I think he might've been a World War II guy or Vietnam. I can't remember, but, he said, you know, I really don't like swearing, but he goes, every swear word in that movie was justified.
Yeah. There's the difference. I mean, there is a time and a place for F-bombs. And Scott seems to know, like, you know, or at least your editing, you knew when to leave it in and when not to. But that's incredible. And also at the screening, if I'm not mistaken, is that the one where President Trump actually showed up to it, or is that a different
one? Right. Okay. So, there were many great people that helped on this movie that, you know, I don't even know where to begin. But you know, like, I guess I really should pause and just say, you know, like, You know, Dan Carapreza was the one, you know, just that first, you know, kind of gave this thing a chance to blossom. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he found this great guy, Desi Caruso, who did all the amazing music. These are all conservatives, you know, and, you know, our graphics person, Patrick Del Vecchio, and, you know, it's a bunch of Italians. Yeah. And, we all were like fighting like a little family, you know, but
yeah.
You know, and then my re-recording mixer, this guy, Christopher Cook, he won 2 Emmy Awards, and he's my loyal liberal friend.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. He's done all my movies. He's like, he did Muscle Shoals, and he did like the Tony Bennett movie, and like he's brilliant. Okay. Yeah. So this Barry Morgenstein, I don't know if you know who Barry Morgenstein is, but he's a conservative, patriotic photographer.
Okay.
It's shot like concerts way back, you know, everything. But he introduced me to this guy, Frank Torcha, who's a producer. I'm getting to Mar-a-Lago, I promise. Frank Torcha, this is how you get a movie made, seen, you know, it's just one guy to the next. And then Frank Torcha brought us Global Ascension Studios, who are, you know, conservatives. Josh Macello and Arthur Sarkisian, and you know, just two amazing like heavy hitters in the industry. Mm-hmm. Arthur, you know, did the Rush Hour movies with Jackie Chan.
Oh, wow.
New one, and you know, and basically they watch this movie and they're like, "This is really good," you know, So they, you know, they started pumping money into this, you know, they took this to, they got us the screening at Mar-a-Lago with, you know, Giuliani, who's in our documentary, showed up, Kevin Sorbo, Jimmy Levy, like all these like conservative, you know, people. It was just amazing. Like to screen my film that I had no idea is even going to go anywhere. You know, you hope and pray. And next thing you know, you're in the house of the President of the United States with all these people, the red carpet, the press. No, it was really cool. And the whole time we're going, is Trump going to come? You know? So my heart sinks because in the middle of the movie, it stops. And then as a filmmaker, you're going, oh God, something's wrong. You know?
Yeah.
But I know something was not wrong because I checked the film a million times. And then, you know, guess who walks in? Trump. No. And you know, he just, like the Pope, blesses our film.
Yeah.
And he leaves, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, just like, That's what you want. You know, if you're a conservative film, Mar-a-Lago is the Sundance of
you got that right.
Mm-hmm. And we're sure as hell not getting into Sundance. So, it's great. Josh and Arthur want to get this. So they're releasing it June 14th, Flag Day, Trump's birthday, U.S. Army birthday.
Yep.
We're going full on John Cassavetes with this. We're going to four wall theaters and you know, but I think we've already had offers for distribution. I'm not sure, but, or interest or something, but like they're going to go to some of the biggest, distributors out there. And
yeah, I was going to ask, like, where is it going to be? Yeah. Where will you be able to see it? Where is it going to, you know? Let me ask you, I guess in this direction, do the big theater companies or whoever owns them, I don't know the behind the scenes on any of this. So if I ask a stupid question, well, odds are I'm going to, are they also, I mean, you hear liberal Hollywood, right? You ran through it all. Are they the ones who would control, okay, no, they can't go in, you know, AMC theaters or wherever these things are, right? So how do you get past all of that to get it released and how and where?
Okay, so I think you know, the festivals and, you know, mm-hmm. like some of those gatekeepers, the some agents, some producers, you know, like,
yeah,
probably most likely don't want us to succeed, right?
Of course.
But, mm-hmm. you know, but like the distributors, the movie theaters, I believe, I don't know because I don't know everybody, but mm-hmm. I believe that these are numbers people.
Yes.
You know, and we have, you know, half arguably more of the population, you know,
correct.
In our pocket. And that's our audience. Mm-hmm. And they want this effing thing because
yeah.
they never get stuff for them ever.
Right. Yeah.
Ever. There's nothing. There's nothing for
yeah.
this side of the country mm-hmm. out there.
Yeah.
Nothing. You correct. Flip your neck, Netflix, you know.
Yep.
You know, you're hardly, you'd be lucky if you find one thing that's just remotely similar to your values.
Yeah.
You know,
correct. So,
and, you know, like our trailer's almost at 1 million views
yeah.
mm-hmm. on, you know, TikTok, Instagram combined, mm-hmm. YouTube. And that is with being pushed down.
Yeah. Like you're right.
Yep. We know for a fact that they push down our content. I mean, I was talking to a friend who works at Google and she, you know, and she was telling me, you know, it's just cause there's so much content on there. And I say, well, how do you explain that on YouTube, we have 30,000 views, but on TikTok, we have 1 million.
Right? Yep. Yeah. How do you explain like, that?
How mm-hmm. do you explain that? And she's like, oh, well, you know, TikTok's owned by China.
Mm. Yeah, come on.
So yeah.
what does that have to do with
if we have 1 million views and everything is like being filtered against us,
yeah,
then, you know, so
imagine
our producers are like, they believe in this film and they yeah. know that, you know, that we can get this film to our audience and they're going to love it and they're going to go nuts and, you know, and we hope it's going to be like Sound of Freedom.
That's exactly what I think we were all thinking. What you know, blows my like mind. That was incredible.
And you might know more about this, Chris, than we do. But, you know, the party of inclusion, right? That's what we have to hear all the time. The left is the party of inclusion. Everybody in this industry knows how hard it is to get where people get. They know how mm-hmm. hard it is. So when you've got individuals like yourself who, okay, so fine, you're not liberal, you're conservative. Mm. It's amazing me how they fight to keep you down instead of, okay, well, I disagree with what you're saying. Because we're not telling them they can't make their movies, right? We're just not going to go. But we don't tell them you can't make your movies, and we don't sit there and protest movie theaters and everything else. And from your stance there, because you're there, you know what's going on, you see how it's going on. Is it just the politics that they say this, or what is the reason why they don't help individuals like yourself? You know what? We all succeed. You know, what's wrong mm-hmm. with that?
Yeah. Yeah. And why don't well, they? I mean, what is really the truth?
I think that a lot of these people, at least the ones that are making the decisions, you mm-hmm. know, I think they built their careers off of the backs of these marginalized groups, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. you know, they think that we don't have empathy, you know, they think that we're racist and we mm-hmm. don't have empathy. Yeah. I made a film about a Native American kid, mm-hmm. you know, I spent like 5 years on the reservation researching. I went to like Sundance ceremonies mm-hmm. and I still love the Native American people. I grew up with black people, lesbian people mm-hmm. in my house. You know, I just helped out a lesbian friend who's mm-hmm. a Democrat who was suicidal,
yeah.
you know, like, yep. like, and when none of her friends stepped up to the plate.
Correct.
And right. I just got her help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so like we're the ones that are going to help you. Don't yeah. piss us off, you know?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. and like, you know, we're the cops, the firemen, the EMTs, and just like average people that would step up to the plate if they saw something happen, you know? Yep. They wouldn't leave you in the street bleeding. Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you did a film on how, you know, let's say you did a film that showed positive light of George Floyd. Good luck finding that, by the way. But if you did a show on that, finding that, you would be in every movie theater. You'd be you'd be presented. You'd probably win an Oscar and stuff like that. And so that's what irritates me. Let's let it both succeed. Why does one have to succeed over the other? Is what I don't like. Well, yeah.
Back to your point, because what I was going to get at is that I think that they built their careers on, capitalizing. Not all of them are, doing this for the wrong reason, but maybe some of them are just like capitalizing off of this like manufactured empathy.
Yeah.
And they built their careers. They've written books. They've made films. They're like, they have all their chips in this one corner, you know? And so when you come along and you offer a different narrative, then, you're challenging everything they built their life and career on. I think that comes into play, but I also, they look down on, the working men and women of this country. And they look down on, everybody in between, and whereas I love this part of the country, and I feel like there's a poetry and there's a love to, rural America, and I don't just love it as a concept. I feel it because when I'm in New York and I walk down the street, I feel like I'm walking by these empty, angry ghosts, constantly. Not everybody, everybody. But when I'm in the Midwest, and I don't even work in New York. Most of the jobs I do are in Texas or Florida or just somewhere else. And like when I'm in these places, I'm just with these people that would give. They still have the capacity to give. And I feel so much love and grace, and I do feel that here, but not as great the amount as I do in these other places.
Sure, yeah. So which tells you everything you need to know. I think. I mean it's true. I think we all feel that we're in a major city of some sort. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but you know the places we're talking about, and you feel it's just different. There's a different attitude. There's a different snobbiness. Whatever you want to call it. And then rural America it's the backbone of the country. It's what drives the country, and the whole looking down upon them is always, Jim, that's just always been a subject that's both pissed Jim and I off probably the most. Is like, don't look down on those that are really, really responsible for what you get to do every day.
We go to your movies.
What you get to do every day. And it literally just angers me to death. So I feel you. I know.
I think also, I think we got to talk about faith here a little bit too.
Absolutely.
I feel like I've always gone to church, but now that I have a kid and I'm trying to truly live in a Christian way because my kid is looking at me, and like now I have to really walk the walk and talk now because I have a kid, and so I've been thinking deeply about God and just, reading the Bible. And I turned off. I used to listen to the liberal stations just to hear what they were talking about. Now I turn them off.
Yeah.
I don't even want to hear anymore. And I turn them off and I listen to whatever the Christian radio station. And I love it. I love it. And
hey, boys and girls. Forgive me, my handsomeness escaped me today because I celebrated a little too much last night. It's called being hungover. These bags and wrinkles under my eyes are rewards. Last night was epic. Epic.
top of the world, Ma. We screened the movie, our movie, The Relentless Patriot, at Mar-a-Lago. With all the great patriots, 200 of the greatest, coolest patriots, media people, you name it. Halfway through the movie, I mean, people are going wild. I'm not just saying this because it's about me. The movie's not about me. I'm in it. It's my life. It's my work of all these decades. But it's about waking everybody up and pulling emotions to save this fucking country. Clapping, cheering, cursing at the thing, crying. I sat back and I watched these people. So it's going to be, it's an epic movie. Anyway, halfway through the film, the screen goes black. The lights come on. I'm like, what the fuck? This is my moment. Some guy walks in a suit and a red tie. What's his name? President Donald J. Trump. Hello. Yeah. He comes in. The crowd goes crazy. He grabs me. We go down. I had all my paintings lined up. And he loves the one I did of him all jacked up called POTUS 45. He said he's going to buy that one. And I think he was serious. Anyway, then we get on stage. He's talking, laughing, and everything, and the crowd's bada. And Josh Masiello's up there with me, the producer, one of the producers of the movie. And he says, Donald, President Trump, we're going to make an announcement right here while you're on stage with us. The release date of The Relentless Patriot will be June 14th, 2024. And all you patriots know what June 14th is, don't you? That's Flag Day. It also is President Trump's birthday. What a combination. What a day to release The Relentless Patriot. That's right, folks. Now, just because I'm in my high note and auditory, I'm on the top of the world, man. I'm the king of the world right now. I'm a superstar last night. Today's another day because I get back to New York in a couple of days. And I get back to fucking business, which is fighting for you people, you small business owners, you pizzeria owners, you bagel shop owners. Because on Wednesday, March 20th at noon, we are all going there to feed the fucking pigeons and feed them well. Last time I did it, I was alone. This time we're all doing it. And if you're not there and you own one of these pizzerias that he's shutting down or gonna make you pay 50 fucking grand for some bullshit restrictions, and you're not there, then I don't give a fuck about your business. All right? We're gonna bring two pieces each, two pies each. One pie, we're going to throw slices over the fence to feed the pigeons. And throw a half a dozen bagels over the fence to feed the pigeons at City Hall. And the other side of the fence where we are, we're going to set up tables and we're going to feed the homeless with the other. Ah, what are you wasting food for? Shut up. Know your history. You think the people of Boston wanted to toss their fucking beloved tea into the ocean? No. Into the harbor? No. They did it to make a sacrifice and to make a point and to make fucking history and say, fuck you, government. Fuck you, mayor. You're not taking our shit. So, tune in for the movie. You'll know more about it. June 14th, it comes out in theaters near you. And Wednesday, folks, New Yorkers, I'll be back. I'll see you there Wednesday at noon, March 20th.
That, you know, with this faith thing, I do believe that, you know, because I've been thinking deeply about this, is that it really comes down to a belief in something outside of yourself, you know, or
yeah,
the alternative to that is, and this is what my father was like, you know, all I have to do is look at him. He didn't believe in anything else, and he only believed in himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that just brought a lot of like egotism and negativity. And I truly believe that that's what's going on, but and it doesn't have to be God in the Christian sense either. I mean, that just happens to be what correct. I believe, but you know, like I know this really great yoga instructor who, you know, is a yogi and, mm-hmm. you know, and she knows everything. Like she knows that I just screened my film at Mar-a-Lago for Trump.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I so many of my other liberal friends are gone.
Yeah. You know?
But she's there and she was actually in one of my movies, but this is a truly holy person. You know, I'm using this as an example because she's such a good person and she really has found some greater power. So it can be that also, but it's correct. Just something outside of yourself that says it's not just about me, and I have to give back. I have to do like good work. I have to be nice. I have to be graceful. I have to be humble. And I don't know.
Funny, Chris, when you said faith, Dale and I knew you were talking about everyone who believes whatever God they want to believe in. Mm-hmm. But when, and this is what's sad, when a left hears us say that, they think we're just talking about Christians. And that's not the case. When you talk faith, you're talking every religion, everybody who believes in God or believes in what they want to believe in. And that's important because that's what – it doesn't matter what you believe or how you believe. We all have to believe faith. You have to have faith. And it's interesting that you put that.
And it's so obvious to me now that – and this is why like I can't go back because I see it's so obvious that like doors are opening just because I said, you know what? I'm not driving the ship.
Yeah.
You
know? That's right. Yep. Right. And look, I mean, that's really, that's amazing. Really. That's the success story out of all of this, regardless of anything else that you've done prior or will. The fact that you had that awakening, I guess, you know, in a sense, to realize
I'm gonna keep messing up, you know, but
sure. Well, that's the free will that we all have and to make those decisions, and they will be, and there's no perfect person. So you're going
but that anchor is heavier than it's ever been ever.
Yeah.
It's great. Chris, it's great news. Let's get into, Wheelchairs for Warriors.
We want to
talk about that. We want to make sure we get enough time so we can talk about this fundraiser that you do. So if you don't mind telling us a little bit about it and then eventually how we can all help review, go where to go find out about this and donate to them.
Yeah. I had never made a commercial before, although I had edited many commercials and I worked at these ad agencies that I just couldn't stand. They were just like these like globalists, like, you know, everything for the corporate dollar. Sure. Like it just wasn't me, but I learned a lot about advertising. So when Wheelchairs for Warriors came to me, because they knew me through Ryan Weaver.
We've
interviewed him.
Yep.
I did a music video for Ryan Weaver called "Let's Talk About Heroes." And
you did that?
Holy cow.
Oh, okay. So this is all tying in. This is nice. Okay. Now we know.
Yeah. Full circle.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No. And, you know, Ryan knows everybody. That Ryan just, that opened up a lot of doors for me, you know, just doing that music video. I meet this person, that person. And all of those connections are so valuable for me because not only are these great human beings, like the women from Wheelchairs for Warriors that I met, you know, through Ryan, you know, Crystal Larimore, Heidi Hansing, and Sean Dominguez, you know, the three ladies from Wheelchairs for Warriors that I met, you know, at one of the fundraisers, Warrior Shield fundraiser.
Oh, okay.
You know, in Orlando. Mm-hmm. But these connections are so important because now that I'm going onto this, I'm taking a new road and like, you know, it's going to be a lot harder for me to work in Hollywood after doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I need my conservative community. And the great thing is that they're all most of the people I meet are just amazing human beings.
Correct.
And they help you and you want to help them. And that's what we need to do. We need to all help each other.
Agreed.
And so, and Ryan has a lot of music in The Relentless Patriot. That's the other thing, you know? Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. And yeah. So his music's featured in that.
Ryan Weaver has at least four songs in the movie.
Cool. That's awesome.
And, I asked him, I said, Ryan, can I put these in here? And they work perfectly, you know?
Yeah.
So
he's amazing. Amazing guy.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing. And, my favorite song that he ever did is What You Think of Me. And
that's
absolutely.
Yep.
I put that in the movie, in a scene pertaining to, you know, the 13 military members, service members that we lost when, Biden pulled out
of Afghanistan.
And in that movie, that just like makes people gush.
Yeah.
I mean, that like there are guys like Giuliani and,
yeah,
you know, like screening and, you know, like gushing, you know? And so Wheelchairs for Warriors ladies asked me to direct a commercial for them, their first commercial. I was in Italy because I go there. I'm half Italian. And I wrote this thing in Italy with a little limoncello to help me, you know. But actually the way it happened was they're like, okay, who do we want to be in this? And I immediately thought of Ryan, and we all thought of Colonel Greg Gatson. Do you guys know who Colonel Greg Gatson is?
Mm-hmm. Yep, okay, I do. Yeah, so, yep.
Battleship.
Yep.
I called him. I called Greg Gatson in Italy, and I spoke to him for an hour, just absorbing details, you know, because he lost both legs and IED, but he was also like a motivational speaker for the Giants, for the New York Giants. He's got two Super Bowl rings.
Wow. And
he's also a phenomenal actor.
You know? Yeah.
So, and such a positive human being. So, you know, talking to him, I kind of took something that really happened to him and dramatized it into a movie, like basically into a commercial. So basically this is the way I like to work, is like, when I'm talking to veterans and I want to do something about veterans, I listen to them, you know, like unlike a lot of Hollywood directors that will just take like the director's story and then they're like, oh yeah, we care a lot. And then, you know, then you see the movie and they flip it around and, you know, they use their story for, something totally else. Like Jessica Lynch right now wants me to direct, her story. And I'm like, we haven't confirmed it. You know, we have to see
if you want us to ask her. We're talking to her Thursday.
Yeah. Are you really? tell her, like, I know we haven't signed the dotted line, but I'm also doing that. I want to do that, you know, tell her, you know, she knows.
Yeah.
I think she's going to let me too.
we'll push. Good.
I'm also working on a project with Dave Bray, you know, so really cool stuff. But, you know, Hollywood likes to, you know, use the veteran story for their own agenda. That's what happened to Jessica Lynch. She turned down all these big Hollywood studios.
I know.
Mm-hmm. You know, like my friend Jerry De La Sala, who was in Trooper. He's an Iraq veteran, but I cast him as a civilian. He thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's like in a veteran movie. He's not even playing a veteran.
No kidding.
He was in this movie, The Green Zone, and he introduced me to this guy, Monty Gonzalez, who told me that, like, and Monty was the guy that movie was based on.
Oh, okay. And
Monty Gonzalez was one of the first guys into Iraq looking for weapons of mass destruction. That director of that movie totally flipped that story and made it like this anti-war thing. And then that really pissed Monty off. He went on Fox News and told everybody the real story.
Yeah.
So talking to Greg, I get this idea for a commercial based on the fact that he told me that he when he's a photographer and being in a wheelchair, he couldn't get to like these spots to take photos.
Yeah.
He said it one time he broke down because he wanted to get to a spot to take a photo and he couldn't get there because of the wheelchair.
Wow.
So I wrote this story kind of based on something that really happened to him.
Yeah.
And I set it in Moab, Utah, just because I fell in love with Moab.
Beautiful.
The desert out there. And so, you know, Ryan is like his battle buddy trying to get him to this spot, you know, so that he can take this photograph. Wheelchairs for Warriors, they make all terrain custom design wheelchairs for veterans and first responders. So that's the thing, you know, when the VA fails our veterans and, you know, either they get a crappy wheelchair or no wheelchair at all, or whatever, you know, I mean, this is where these small nonprofits that we need to support, Wheelchairs for Warriors, that's where they step up to the plate and, you know, they give these like $20,000 wheelchairs to these veterans that can go off road and now they have some freedom.
Correct. You know? That they deserve, and you know,
they gave us our freedom and this is how we give it back to them. So,
exactly.
Wow.
So in the commercial, Ryan helps them get to this spot, but it's this all terrain vehicle that can get up the rocks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the commercial's on YouTube.
Okay.
It's called Freedom Isn't Free. It's really short, but it pulls all the heartstrings and I recut this as a short film because I like to tell stories, even if it's a commercial,
like
a beginning, middle and end with the same kind of narrative structure. Mm-hmm. So, we're sending it to festivals, you know, right.
Wow.
Now.
Awesome.
It's a crapshoot that you're going to land on a festival that actually wants to honor veterans and, you know, loves our country, but there are some out there and, you know, it's just a means of getting into that one.
Yeah. Festival, you know? Wow. Wow. That's best of luck to that. I mean, what an uphill climb, you know, being a conservative filmmaker, having those values to know exactly the behind the scenes and the other side of it too. I mean, you've been on both sides. I mean, you know,
oh wait, I forgot to show my shirt here.
Oh yeah. Show it. Oh, that's cool. Yep.
Rolling Thank strong. You.
Yeah. And if Jessica, you know, who is a super smart, wonderful person, I think who better to tell her story than you? At this point. So hopefully that all works out too. Cause honestly, it's an incredible story.
It just seems like it fits.
The true part of it is incredible. Yeah.
It just seems like it fits.
Yeah. And it's a hell of a fit. Wow. Small world, honestly. Chris, what else can you tell us? We'll give you the last word. Tell us, again, when the film is debuting, where they might be able to see it, how people can get a hold of to you if they need something filmed or if they want a commercial, if they want something, you know, along those lines. How can they reach
you? Might want a two guy, one coup commercial.
If you need a couple extras for some films, Jim and I work cheap, really cheap. You don't even know how cheap. We might actually pay you.
I'll put you guys in something.
Yeah.
Ooh, that would be awesome.
I'm sure they want to put us in something. All right.
It's inevitable. So,
yeah. If you guys, if you need two guys who pretend they know how to do a podcast, where are your guys? Where are them?
You think I'm joking, but you know, like sometimes there's a time and a place for working with actors, and then there's a time and a place for working with
losers. Like, oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for that.
you're gonna be surprised because the phone might ring when, hey guys, I need you to show up and do this scene. You
know? Yeah, gladly.
We're there.
Gladly. We'll be there anytime you need us. Yep.
The film's gonna be released June 14th and they're going to theaters. You know, they want this in theaters. So
that's awesome.
It will be streaming eventually, but I mean, like, that's the thing is like, I'm a filmmaker. I don't want my film shown on a TV.
Agreed. You know? I know. Right. I understand.
Theater. We got it. We like the theaters are going to go extinct unless we start buying tickets.
Right.
Get out of the house. Get your ass to the movie theater.
Mm-hmm. Have some great popcorn. And just
I mean, it's an experience like none other. You know, you can't experience it that at home. I don't care what your sound system's like or what kind of theater room you have in your home, with the exception maybe Mar-a-Lago or something. But most of us,
that's a little different. Most of us
don't have that kind of theater room. So yeah, go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
And you know, I just go to my Instagram. You know, I'm trying to build up my following there a little bit. And you can follow me there, and you can message me, and you know, you're gonna learn everything about what I'm doing. I've got other great projects. It's Triple Martini Prod. You know, one
prod.
Word.
Okay, so it stops at Prod. So at Triple Martini Prod,
as in Triple Martini Productions, but Triple Martini Prod.
Okay.
If you Google Christopher Martini, it comes up.
It's up there. I see it. Yep. We'll post it on here too, so people can have it. That's awesome. I mean, this has been really, really enjoyable for me. You know, as
it's weird because you mentioned Ryan Weaver and we interviewed him and everything. And so it's just kind of neat. And
it's kind of a nice full circle.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, and then what you do and how you do it. I mean, again, we meet so many great people, Sandra, especially, we need to thank her for that.
Yeah.
And, but it's just awesome. And we appreciate your time and, you're great.
Yeah.
And, can't wait for the release and, we will make sure we push it, up to the point.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
You guys are great. Anytime you want me back on, I mean, maybe
absolutely.
When do you want to? I mean, I literally could talk about films and patriotism and your story and how you've gone down that path. I could spend hours, we can spend hours doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean,
if you want to come on and talk about other movies you've done where you want to,
or anything.
Right? Yeah, we can do it.
I've got some cool stuff coming up that I didn't even mention.
Oh.
But when the film is released, it might be a good time.
You know? Yeah, perfect. I think so too. Yeah, I think so too. So, we've got our contact information. Again, the invitation's open to you. You want to come back on, you've got more you want to talk about and tell, please, you know, reach out to us. We'd be more than happy to have you back on anytime. Yes. Anytime.
Absolutely.
Scott, he doesn't know us, but tell him we said hi. So, you know, we look forward to it, you know. Enjoy.
I'm going to definitely, tell him, see if he'll come on. I mean, sometimes he will, sometimes he won't. I mean, he's
Well, we appreciate that. I mean, that's a stretch, but yeah, we would love that.
Sometimes he's just like, I've been with you for 5 years. Time for you to leave.
I'm done. I'm done.
And I feel the same way. You know,
I got to F and move on to something else. You know,
Scott is such a great guy.
Great.
You know? Yeah. I've been with him long enough to know that he's loyal. He's,
genuine.
He's got a really good heart. He really cares. And, you know, it's amazing the people that go on his Instagram and just attack him.
I know.
Cause I know the real guy, but they're so blinded by,
most of them are.
They're told what we are. They're told by the left who we are, and they don't reach out to find out who we actually are. That's why every year the presidential nominee for Republican is a racist. Every year, every time they run, whatever. I mean,
racist, sexist, homophobe, you name it. I mean, it's everything we are not, you know. But that's the message, and it unfortunately it works with those who can't think for themselves.
That's right.
Personally. So there's
some people that look at the flags those lovely flags that are behind you and think one thing, but I know that when I look at that flag, I see love.
Me too. Love, loyalty, caring, you know, I see it all. Everything.
Blood, love, everything.
Yeah. Yep. Everything. Yep. So absolutely. Good point. Good point. Chris, thank you. We're going to, right after, we get off here, we're going to play a couple of videos of Scott just recently. As a matter of fact, I think getting arrested for littering for littering in New York. We're going to show our audience that too. So, very interesting. unbelievable. It's a good pairing. We thank you for coming on. We thank you for the work you're doing. Welcome to the good side. You know, I know you've been here for a while, but welcome, you know, to that. We appreciate that. We'll stay in touch and we'll talk soon. All right.
All right, you guys.
Thanks, thank
you,
Chris. So much. Welcome. Thank you. Awesome. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
This mayor, the governor, the city council, the DAs are wrecking this fucking city, destroying the small mom and pop businesses. And this is another example. Pizza. They're going to regulations for brick oven pizza. Brick oven pizza is killing the baby seals now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you believe that shit?
Unbelievable.
We have crime running rampant through this city. If this mayor was the man in New York he said he was, he would be going up against D.A. Bragg and taking these criminals off the fucking streets. He'd be going up against Hochul to stop this invasion of illegal aliens that are beating our cops up, raping, killing, and slaughtering. If he was a man. But he's worried about pizza because he hates the small business owner. He hates you New Yorkers. So, I'm going to start feeding the pigeons. Now, anybody else who wants to feed the pigeons with me and throw some pizza over here, you're going to get collared. If you're willing, because of this asshole is telling them to arrest us for littering, for feeding the pigeons. Think about it. And he wants to be an environmentalist and loves nature. That's why he's doing this pizza bullshit. Well, I'm an environmentalist. I love nature. I want to feed these hungry pigeons. And that's what I'm doing here today. We're going to feed them with some pizza, and the rest of the pizza that's left over, we're going to drop off at the Bowery Homeless Shelter to feed the homeless. Amen. So any of you assholes out there who say you're wasting pizza, what are you throwing pizza? You're wasting money and food. Our people back in the day in Boston, those Bostonians loved their tea. Right. They worshiped their tea. That's all they had, some of them. And they sacrificed and threw it in the harbor. And that's what we're doing here today, because you got to make sacrifices to make history, to make fucking change. And that's what us New Yorkers are here to do. We're New Yorkers, period. So
we don't take shit from anybody.
If you're going to throw pizza, don't resist arrest. Do what you got to do. Make sure you don't have any warrants and like that. So without further ado, I'd like to feed the pigeons.
Wow, this is unbelievable.
I'd like to be the first one.
Sorry.
I don't know. Let me let them listen.
I don't know how many people got the balls by Scotty Lebedo done. Okay? Scotty. Here we come. Here we go. And my boy from Jersey's going with him. There he goes. The pizza's over.
Atta boy,
over
Scott.
Fence, Scotty.
Hey, pigeons.
Oh, my goodness, Scotty. You are such a bad, bad guy. You're a criminal. You are.
You're arresting him for pizza?
You're arresting
him for pizza?
Because I was supposed to be a ticket for lettering. I'm supposed to get arrested.
You feed the pigeons.
Lettering is a fine.
It's a fine. It's a fine. Arrest. Arrest the illegals.
This is a fine. This is not an arrest.
I didn't even touch you. I'm recording you on the fucking phone.
Illegals are coming in and murdering.
There's only supposed to be a ticket. This is illegal.
People. We're getting arrested.
Let's get that circlement around here.
Fucking pigeons.
They're arresting Scott Lebedo for littering. For littering. How dare this mayor?
Let me get down.
How dare this mayor? They're arresting somebody for littering in the city of New York.
We look, fuck you, Mayor Adams.
That's fuck you.
Well, Chris, good to know you, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on. What a good behind the scenes look at his life at Hollywood and what it's like to work with Scott, which I can only imagine. Literally, I've been following Scott for a while. So I know of him. Jim, I think you do too. You know, I've seen a lot of his videos. The guy, the Relentless Patriot, couldn't have been a better title for it. What a good job, and how that all worked out, and very interesting for Christopher. I think Jim, the thing that struck me on the interview was, and again, we wanted to give Chris the time to talk about his life and about how he got there, but just the switch from Democrat to Republican, from liberalism to conservatism, and what that's done for his career, what it stopped in his career, and where it's led to in his career. It's a whole new path for him, right? And that's his faith, you know, I always say this, you know, liberals, pretty much most of them are ignorant, you know, when it comes to, and I mean that, and not in the as much negative term as everybody thinks so, but generally ignorant when it comes to the truth out there. They pretty much stay in their lane, and they listen to their people. They listen to the Joy Reids and the Rachel Maddows and the Joe Scarboroughs, and that's who they listen to. And it's a big world out there. And Chris said it best when he said, there's more of us than there are of them. You know, this is a much more conservative nation, still an amazing conservative nation.
And we believe that.
We always have. You know, and so for him to just, you know, he said it was around 9/11. That happened to a lot of people around 9/11. I understand that. But he's subsequent days, he's had a child now. So he believes, you know, like, you know, I got to protect this child. And he sees what's going on around the world. And it's here in this nation, it's a nightmare with Democrats. It's just a pure nightmare. We talk about it every episode. You know, the nightmare that the Democrats have caused in this nation. And so I just thought it was kind of cool how his switch, because that doesn't happen. We always knew, and he even said it, Jim, I think a little bit about, you know, it's like conservatism is like the punk rock of Hollywood, right? Is what he said. And it's true. There's more of them there. They just can't say it, and they won't say it. And that's the problem. That's a major problem. If they all said it, what are they going to do? You know, what are they going
to
do at this
point? I think they need to. I mean, and look what Adam Sandler's doing.
Yeah.
Look what some of these other, they're going on Netflix. They're making these movies from,
but Netflix,
Adam Sandler has enough money to, but they have enough money to produce and to do their own movies, right? They can do that. And then they post it on the streaming services, this and that, this and that, because they can't go to the theater. When's the last time you've seen an Adam Sandler movie at a movie theater?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And he's done a lot of them. There's Netflix
Hidden
and everything.
Gems, I think, was
Netflix,
about the last
left leaning.
Yeah.
Left leaning. I get it. Okay. But they still allow him to be on there. They still allow his shows to go on there. Mm-hmm. And that's what I struck as. Remember the question that I asked him is like, you know, here, don't they want to help each other? I mean, isn't this a situation where here is a filmmaker, just like, because this has got to be one of the toughest industries to get into, right? I mean, we all hear about it all the time. People, they go broke. They commit suicide because they can't make it. They give up everything because they can't make it in this industry that is so hard. And now we find out that we got predators out there. Right. So now you got to watch this stuff. So, so then instead of helping a guy like him, okay, let's go ahead. You know, you do really well with your movies. Let's go ahead and put you into here. And no, they destroy him. They try to destroy him because he doesn't think the way they do. And we don't try to destroy. If they want to do, like, remember Little Mermaid, they wanted to produce Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want with it. I don't care. I'm not going to go watch it.
I don't have to watch it. But that should be everybody's choice. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like NBC firing Ronan McDaniel. It can't have it. It just can't have that. Right. We can't have Americans united. We can't have a choice for it. This is the choice you get to choose. I mean, it's socialism. You know,
this is why the last few Marvel movies, right? Mm-hmm. The Marvel movies are probably the most watched movies worldwide, right? The Avengers and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. The last few that have come out, Madam Web, Captain the Avengers, are Captain, not
Captain.
Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel and stuff, the Marvels. Mm-hmm. They went woke.
Yeah.
And look what they've done. I mean, they've not done anything. And in a simple, we mentioned this on the show. My wife and I went to see Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. God, you know how nice that was just to go to a movie and watch a movie? Whether people said it was good or not, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the movie because I didn't have to worry about anything political. I didn't have to worry about anything. It was just a movie to go and relax and just joke and terrible anything. Movie. Anyway, you've seen the new Ghostbusters?
The girl one?
No, the new one. The new one.
Oh,
that's
the newest one. No, I haven't. Yeah. I haven't. No, I have not.
It's really good. Relax and, you know, you just do that. But
the girl one could have been great, Chris, but it wasn't.
Huh? Oh, the girl with all the great women on there. I actually enjoyed it. I did. I think it's because I did like the female actresses that were in there.
I do too. Kristen Wiig. I like Melissa McCarthy. I like them as actresses. I really do.
Christopher Hemsworth's character was fantastic. I can't answer the phone. It's in the fish tank. Come on.
Terrible movie. Terrible.
Anyway. So.
Go on. So finish your thought.
No, it's okay. But it's interesting. We asked him that question because to you and I, we see it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we see, you know, Disney continues to go woke. They continue to lose money. It's just the Little Mermaid, one of the most popular cartoons ever made.
Yeah.
Ever made.
Yeah.
And then they had to change the movie. And look, no one's against black people at all, but Ariel was white with red hair. What would they do if you and I remade The Wiz and the entire cast was white?
Well, I was thinking the story of the life of Martin Luther King with Bill Murray as Martin Luther King. I mean, like, come on.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just right. You just do what's right, you know, and it's not that you don't have to, again, it's affirmative action that makes everything woke. It's racially driven. We have to do this or we can't get it made. I'm sure you better cast a minority or you're not going to get it made. I mean, I literally, that's the shit that Chris was up against. You know, this movie's going to be this movie could make a crap ton of money, and it's going to, because it's going in theaters, guys. And once it does, you'll see conservatives support it. Conservatives will support it.
Freedom did.
Look what the Sound of Freedom did. That's right. Look what the Sound of Freedom did.
Destroyed everybody at the box office. Completely went way and above and beyond what it cost to make the movie.
Exactly. And that's what conservatives do.
13 hours. Yep, 13 hours. You had Black Hawk Down. You had all of these. Yep. Look at how many people went to watch these movies.
Exactly.
When you make a movie based on basically a documentary on things that have happened, people tend to go watch. I don't want to go watch a movie where Benghazi shows that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were the heroes.
Nope.
Because they weren't. You can't spin it that way.
You can't.
You just can't. But Chris stands by his beliefs, and it just seems like it was right. A perfect match for those two, right?
Perfect match. Scott and Chris. Yep.
Right. Because Scott had to choose him. Scott had to say, yes, I want you to do my and the story of Alvin Bragg. I mean, that was
I know.
Yeah, that's you need story. To go there. Something's good's going to happen here. You got.
Yeah, that's right. you need to go. There. I know. It's like, nope. I need to. His instincts kicked in on that one. So, anyways, Chris, thank you so much again. That was wonderful. We can't wait to have you back. And we will as it gets closer to the date, the release date and all that. And we look so very forward to it. We'll keep plugging it. It's going to be amazing. And Scott's just a great patriot of this country and an amazing artist too. If you haven't seen his work, Scott Lobato, great artist.
It's even greater.
Oh, even greater patriot. Got to watch his stuff, folks.
Yeah.
Anyways, Jim, I think that's it for the week. We will be back next week. Stay tuned. We have another interview coming for you. A very, very good interview coming for you. So stay tuned for that. I usually don't talk about it before we actually record, but I feel very confident on this one. So, it's another hero of our nation.
You have to. Literally. Yeah. I mean, you have to.
Another hero of our nation. So stay tuned for that. Got so much going on, Jim. It's been a hell of a March. So we appreciate it. I want you and your family to have an amazing Easter, and all our listeners,
you too.
Have a safe Easter holiday.
And for those of who,
for those of you who get Good Friday off,
have a have fun. Well, I technically, I know. I guess I know, but that's,
you're taking vacation, but you have to take vacation.
Jim's covering for me. Appreciate it, brother. Anyways, happy Easter to you and your family, Jim. Happy Easter to everybody out there.
You as well.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it. And until then, we will see you.
Can I say one last thing?
Absolutely. You can always,
because I am like, I'm excited.
Yeah.
When you hear this show, folks, it will be opening day.
Oh, true. Yeah,
that's absolutely. Things are good again.
Yep,
things are good again. Baseball is starting. Things are good again. I know some people don't think so.
No, but spring is in the air. It's a sign of spring. It's a sign of hope. It's a sign of regrowth.
And you feel differently.
Yeah.
Baseball for me starts at 4:15 Eastern time tomorrow.
Yep, that's right.
Yours might start at 1 o'clock.
Well, that's true. Yeah, yeah, you're right. There'll be a few hours and maybe even a day difference. That's true. And finally, happy birthday to my son, by the way. As we're recording today is his birthday, so happy birthday to him. Greatest son a father could have. I know you disagree, and you have a right to, because we got some great sons. We got some great sons.
Yeah. My son's great too, but your son's great. Yes, we have great
sons. So,
and my son probably prefers you. There you go.
I have two great sons. And two great daughters. That's right. Jim, I am done.
Take care of them.
I'm not paying for a wedding. Jim, we'll talk to you later. Everyone have a good weekend. Be safe. We'll talk to you next week. See you, brother. Bye.
God bless. God bless.
You've been listening to the Two Guys, One Coup podcast with Dale and Jim. Remember, you can watch on YouTube and Rumble and listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you like what you hear, go ahead and give us a 5-star review. We really appreciate it, and it helps others find us when searching for podcasts. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and TikTok. Just search for Two Guys, One Coup. That's the number 2, guys, and the number 1, coup, C-O-U-P. Thanks again for listening to the Two Guys, One Coup podcast, and God bless the United States of America.